Okay, great. So thanks for letting me call in. Apologies, this is remote, unplanned. I was hoping I could be there. I hope the connection quality is okay. If it's not, or that changes at some point, just, you know, give a shout. Okay, so today I'm going to talk about multiversal ray tracing, which is a new way of handling dynamism in lighting simulations. So when we talk about dynamism and daylight simulations in particular, there are really two kinds that we care about. So one is that of the environment, meaning the sun and sky change from time step to time step, and the other is dynamism of objects in the scene itself. So these are shades moving up and down or glazing units switching tint. And it's really the second kind of dynamism that the multiversal approach is all about. So that's going to be the focus of the first part of my talk, and then I'm going to come back at the end and say a couple things about lighting as well. So scene dynamism. There have been a couple approaches to this over the years, but it's probably fair to say that the 3- and 5-phase methods are still the state of the art. And you guys know how these work, but basically one ray trace from sensor to window, separate ray trace from window to sky, and then transmission matrices in between. And the good thing about these when it comes to scene dynamism, of course, is that we can do those ray traces once and then swap in as many fenestration states as we want after the fact. But there are a couple drawbacks, and I would break those down into three distinct problems. So the first one is what I like to call the teleportation problem, and that is because we do Clem's binning over entire window surfaces. There's really no relationship between where a V-phase photon strikes the inside of a window and where it launches from the outside. So there's kind of this magic leap or teleport that happens from one place to another. Now, that's not a problem if there are no near-phase obstructions outside the window, but if there are, as when we have balconies or overhangs, then this teleporting behavior starts to introduce errors. One way we can mitigate this is just by breaking the window into smaller pieces, but this raises its own set of questions too, like who's responsible for doing that? Is it the architectural modeler? How big should the subdivisions be? And then if they're really small, what's that going to do to the number of matrices we need to store and manipulate? Second problem, very much related to the first, is how we deal with curvature. So this is a building I actually used to work in San Francisco. I sat actually right by one of these filleted corner conditions. And here again, because we need a planar collection surface, we'd have to kind of break the curve into planar fragments, which of course introduces the risk of light leaks and also just isn't really how we'd want to visualize the window either. The third problem though is to me the most serious, and it's what I call the interaction problem. And that is because the phase approaches use glow sources to represent windows, it treats them as one-way transmitters, right? So there's no possibility of photons reflecting off the inside face of glass or the inside face of a shade. And we also can't have photons bounce off one complex fenestration unit and pass through another. Likewise, you can't have photons pass outside the building and back into the building or outside the building and bounce off the outside of another complex fenestration unit. So the second we have corner conditions or serrated facades or bay windows or interior courtyards, we start to run into problems. Also, dynamic fenestration isn't the only thing in the world that changes, right? So we'd like to be able to handle interactions between fenestration and, say, deciduous trees, knowing that the daylight conditions and comfort conditions are obviously very different when the leaves are present or absent. Now, in a phased approach, one way we could deal with this is simply running the daylight phase twice, right? So once with leaves, once without. But the second we want to start accounting for, say, partial states of leaf growth or leaf fall, or color changes in the shoulder seasons, or even like heterogeneity in the scheduling of these things, then the number of separate simulations start to mount. Another thing about the phased approach is that it kind of presumes to know the order in which things happen, right? So if you place a tree in the daylight phase, you're sort of saying that leaves can affect shades, but not the other way around. But of course, it's at least conceivable that the illumination on a tree could depend on whether shades are up or down. So it would be nice if we had a better way of handling all these interactive effects, and ideally a way of tracing paths in which photons can interact with any number of dynamic elements in any order without any preconceived notion of phasing at all. And it's this objective that led me to the idea of the multiverse. Okay, so what do I mean by multiversal ray tracing? Well, there are really three tenets. So one is we don't bin photons by location. Two, there's no starting and stopping of the ray trace. And three, when a photon encounters a dynamic surface, everything always happens. And what I mean by that is if we have a dynamic surface like a shade that can be there or not, right, if it's open or closed, we simply have to evaluate both conditions at the same time. Now, that sounds great, but how does it actually work? So let's start with an observation, which is that because radiance is a ray tracer and not a path tracer, from the perspective of a photon, it's already multiversal. And what I mean by that is that when a ray strikes a material or surface, if we consider that ray to be a photon, then everything that could happen to that photon does happen to it, right? It's scattered backwards, it's scattered forwards, it's transmitted straight through the material as if it weren't even there, provided the definition affords those behaviors. And it turns out that in order to make a surface or material multiversal, meaning if we want to have, say, a shade that's in a superposition of being there and not being there, so we can turn it on or off, all we have to do are two things. So one, we do have to guarantee there's a transmitted ray, right? Because that's the direction a photon would continue traveling if the surface weren't there. And then two, after the fact, we have to change the contributions, right, to instantiate the condition that we're interested in, right? So for example, if we want to make a shade disappear, all we really have to do is bump up the transmitted contribution and set all the others to zero. In practice, the way we do this is with entire light paths, meaning when a ray strikes a light source like the sun or the sky, we walk down that path from the source all the way back to the origin. And if there are dynamic surfaces interacted with along the way, we ask, what are the state of those surfaces at the time step or animation frame or state of the universe that we're interested in? And we adjust the contributions accordingly. And in this way, we can actually account for, with one path, whether, say, both the shade and the leaf are present, or just the leaf, or just the shade, or neither. And we do this processing as the ray trace progresses. So we don't need to store all the rays, which is good because there are a lot of them. And we also assess the scene states or time steps on the GPU. And it doesn't have to be that way, but that lets us keep pace with the ray trace. In fact, on a modern graphics card, a dedicated card, we can process thousands of states faster than radiance can actually spit out the paths, which means we don't need to throttle the ray trace at all. Okay, so let's look at an example, and just start with shades. So this is a corner office. I'm modeled with 8 windows with operable shades. And the shades here are modeled with a placeholder material that's kind of a diaphanous, half there, half not there. And there's no actual universe that looks like this, but this is just the raw octree that we're tracing. And when we feed this octree to the multiversal engine, the engine can traverse the paths and turn the shades on or off in any combination we like. So with a single ray trace, we can instantiate a universe in which the shades are, say, all open or all closed or some combination of the two in about the same time as a single rendering. So that's really cool, but it gets better because by storing the texture coordinate at the intersection, we can actually decide that just parts of the shade exist and parts don't exist, right? So we can turn the shade on above a specified coordinate or off below it, which means we can get shades partially drawn, right? And we can do that again with one ray trace in any configuration we want. And all these images were produced from a single ray trace. If you don't believe me, you can look closely at the noise, which kind of stays the same. And we could have written out a lot more, right? In fact, in this model, because there are 8 shades and I happen to store the texture coordinate as a single byte, they're about 256 to the 8th or 10 to the 19th, approximately different potential universes that we've kind of already traced in this single image space. And when we compare any of these universes to a reference simulation point in time, we find they're the same. So here is a difference image. There's a bit of ambient noise, but it's actually the same thing you get when you compare two reference images, just because it's a cacheless render of finite quality. And that difference goes away when we say denoise the two images, or even if we just compare the luminance over small pixel regions. And that equivalence holds for any of the configurations we choose. Okay, now I said that we dispose of the pass as we go, but since this was too tempting to resist, I wanted to see if we could store the whole multiverse in memory. And it turns out it's at least possible. So here I've stored all the pass and interactions on the graphics card. And when you do this, you can set up a little UI like I did here, where you can set the shape positions in real time. I don't know, is this playing smoothly on your end? This is an animated GIF. Anyway, so I'm not sure I can get this working on everyone's machines. It took a couple gigs of graphics memory, but it's a compelling idea. And you could easily extend this to electrochromics, et cetera. I even started having a little fun with the details here. If you notice, they're now like bars at the bottom of the shades, right? Which you can easily sneak in if you just say, you know, adjust the transmitted portion by turning it off just above the shade position. Okay, so that's shades. How about trees? Well, the exact same techniques work, right? So we can turn the leaves on or off, just like we can turn the shades on or off. And we can use the same texture coordinate trick to scale the leaf, right? So if you store texture coordinates along the mesh faces of the leaf, you can just turn it off at higher coordinates to shrink it. We can get the various stages of leaf growth. We can add another trick too, which is changing color, right? So here, if we use a white placeholder material instead of the actual leaf material and the octree, then we can simply scale the contribs up and down for the ambient reflections to get the correct color renditions in summer or fall. And again, here, if we have enough GPU memory, right, we can play with this in real time. So what we have then is a general purpose multiversal machine that can take a single ray trace and express any combination of states, and the result will be the same as running the conditions separately. And so that's the multiverse in a nutshell. And this works well generally for anything where the surface stays in place, right? So shades, leaves, electrochromic windows. We could do snow this way seasonally, which could be useful. It's a little tougher to do rotating blinds because the surfaces move and there are a lot of needless interreflections there. So this is something we're still thinking about how to handle. But our plan is to roll this into version 2 of Climate Studio for annual daylight simulations, for glare, and hopefully for some fun animation features like this. Okay, now I promised at the end I would circle back to lighting, and I've left this out until now for a reason, which is that the multiverse approach, as I described, is kind of all about the scene dynamism, right? So it doesn't so much care how sources are modeled. If the sun is a light source or a Tregenza patch, you know, it still works. That said, we have put some work into how the sun and sky are sampled, and particularly focused on introducing higher quality image-based results. So I'm going to say just quickly a bit about what those new approaches are and then share some performance data at the end. Let's start with the sky because it's easy. So because we process, as I mentioned, each path separately in the GPU, we actually don't need to do patch discretization of the sky at all because we can just use the pres function. So there's actually no difference between annual and point in time results at all. And generally speaking, the sky component converges really fast. So we get good results quickly. So it's not that fun to talk about. The more interesting topic is the sun, which in direct view is easy to find, right? Because there's just one viewpoint and you can send a bunch of shadow tests to knock these out. And a lot of annual approaches already do this, right? For a direct view correction. Things get more interesting, though, when you start dealing with reflections or other material effects, right? So if you have, say, a glass facade with pure mirror reflections, that yields sort of important glare. sources, and you could use mirror sources to set this up, but we actually decided to use super sampling. So starting with our sky trace, we look for pure reflection paths that strike the sky within shadowing distance of a solar disk, and then we send a bunch of super samples into those pixels. And what's cool about this is that we can correctly handle reflections off reflectors that aren't planar, right? So curved surfaces, if you think of warped IGUs as exist in the wild, we could handle those correctly as well. Now, if you have a reflector that's specular but not smooth, like a metal, right, you have to worry about rough reflections. And this is where Radiance finds the sun using shadow tests. And this is also where adaptive sampling comes in handy, because you have, right, lots of suns, lots of pixels. This is also probably where what I'm describing overlaps the most with what RayTraverse already does. So I won't claim credit for this, and I probably don't need to over-explain it too much. But basically, you start with coarse sampling and then subdivide where there's variance, so you end up assigning the most samples to the brightest regions. Another reason the first bounce shadow test is really important is because patch coefficients can lead you astray. So we've been seeing this for a while with user models. This is a gymnasium with a thin strip of a clear story glass at the top, a very large space. So as you can imagine, the smearing due to the patch approximation is quite extreme. And this leads to big illuminance errors, even when you correct for direct view, and even surprisingly sometimes when you go to smaller patch sizes. So using actual suns is quite important. Once you get past the first bounce shadow test, you could go back to using patch coefficients, and generally after the first bounce, those errors get smaller. So this would be like a five-phase rendering approach. But the patch coefficients do take a long time to converge. And unless you want to wait forever, there's a lot of noise, right? So for image-based metrics in particular, like DGP, this is not a great strategy. So we actually end up just doing shadow tests all the way through. And you end up getting better results more quickly, even if you go to coarser sampling. One final wrinkle is caustic. So I mentioned rough specular highlights. These obviously affect not just direct view, but also secondary bounces. The trick is that they're hard to find, right? Because you need a lot of ambient samples, and you need those samples just to luck into the direction where those highlights are. So one new concept we've thrown in is the highlight cache. So this is a little bit different from a real cache because we don't reuse values. But what it is during the full depth shadow testing, we remember directions of peak ambient samples. And then that's used to predetermine super sampling regions in a subsequent pass. So you don't have to, you know, spray the entire hemisphere with ambient samples that are less important on the next pass. You just target the highlight regions. And it turns out you can hunt down highlights much faster this way than with out of the box techniques. Okay, so some results. So far, I've unleashed all this just on six test cases, which come from Stefan's method comparison paper. But those do a pretty good job of covering different material conditions. So for each scene, there are three views, all compared to ground truth reference simulations for every time step. And we ran a few different metrics for this, but for DGP, the correlation looks like this. So this is for all three views kind of together for the six models, and for just time steps with direct sun, about 50 watts per square meter direct normal. And we effectively get no bias and actually very little scatter on the outliers too. So the RMSC even is below one part in 100 for all the models. If you just take the conditions between 0.25 and 0.75 DGP, so these are right the conditions that are plausibly affecting the category, you get a similar story. And just for context, if you compare this from other benchmarks, this is the table from Stefan's thesis. That's an extremely tight correlation, right? So there aren't very many cases where you can sort of put up zeros John, for all these. Yeah.
John, I'm sorry to interrupt. We've been muted, so we couldn't talk to you, but you haven't advanced past slide 53. We're still on slide 53 for some reason.
Oh. Let me see.
Okay. Now it's 54. Yeah.
Okay, now it's moving. Sorry, I don't know why I was stuck. So this is the shadow test. So all the way through. This was the directional highlight cache. You know, looking in particular directions and sort of storing those highlight directions for subsequent ambient lookup. And here are the six test cases. Apologies for the hiccup here. And so here's the scatter plot. So again, this is for the three views combined for all six models. And we're seeing, right, very little sign deviation, so no systematic bias, and also like pretty tight scatter, so the RMSE is pretty low. And now caught up, here's the 0.25 to 0.75, the range with similar numbers. So when you compare this to the benchmarks in Stefan's paper, right, it's doing quite well. So at two significant figures, you're getting almost no error in any of the categories. One caveat is that we reran the references here to eliminate caching errors. So we're comparing to a slightly different reference set. I think the results will be similar, but either way, we're sort of encouraged that the engine appears to be producing good results for these test cases. The other piece I'm sure everyone wants to know about is speed, right? So this is even less apples to apples because the hardware is different. But running on 8 threads on my desktop, the average runtime across 18 views is 1.8 seconds. So we're excited about that, especially to beat our old Climate Studio score. I will say this result leans really hard on the graphics hardware. So we need to do a lot of testing, a lot more machines to get a better range of benchmarks. Next steps for this, so we're definitely going to run more models, including some difficult cases, materials we haven't tried yet, more levels of detail to the point of previous presentations. And then looping back to the first part of the presentation, doing this for the dynamic reference cases, which have just taken us longer to set up, but we plan to do that. I think I'm over time, so I won't get into other things. Just looking at shadow caching and pure caustics are of interest to us. And then finally, when will this be available? We don't know exactly, but a work-in-progress version of the engine should be ready for testing in the fall. And that usually goes to product advisors, but I would love for specifically everyone in this room to help test if interested. So if you want to take part, just send me an email, john@salama.com.